From KCRW, I'm Evan Kleiman, and you're listening to Good Food.
Doing the media stuff was something that, again, when we started the podcast, I was just so we could talk about Majordomo, the restaurant, hence the name Majordomo Media. It was like not even something I was really planning it too well.
Life has certainly changed for David Chang since I last interviewed him. It was March 2018, right when his hit Netflix show Ugly Delicious came out, and not long after he opened Majordomo, his first LA restaurant. Since then, his media footprint has multiplied several times over. He now has a successful podcast, The Dave Chang Show. Earlier this year, he received a James Beard Award for his reporting at the PyeongChang Winter Olympics. And yes, there are more TV shows on the way.
It just continued to happen. And next thing I knew, we had more opportunities in media.
Part of what makes Chang so compelling on screen is that he seems to bring his authentic, unfiltered self to every project. There's a real curiosity about local food culture and people, and he's never afraid to ask questions. Now Chang has teamed up with director Morgan Neville on a new series that hit Netflix this week. Over four episodes, Chang explores a different city with a friend, using three meals as a way to facilitate honest conversations and discovery. It's called Breakfast, Lunch, and Dinner. The first one I watched was Seth Rogen in Vancouver. And you're basically spending the day together, meandering whatever city has been chosen. Did you have a relationship with these folks already? Did you pick them? Was it awkward to spend the entire day with them?
I had met everyone before, and some I knew better than others. Like, I've known Chrissy Teigen for over a decade.
No chefs.
No chefs. Same crew that did Ugly Delicious in terms of the production and the team. A few changes here or there, but the idea was to do something just totally different, but also fun.
And using food as a way to facilitate language and connection.
That it was the great icebreaker.
Yeah. So let's talk about Seth in Vancouver because weed, because hashtag weed.
Yes.
I have to say you're completely adorable stoned.
Well, I was very stoned. Seth's marijuana is so
potent.
I can't
even imagine.
It's just, it's like nothing for him. I won't say it's awe-inspiring, but it's, you're like, this man is supernatural in his pot-smoking abilities.
It's the one episode where you're with somebody who is in the city in which they grew up and with whom they have this intense connection.
Yeah. We wanted everyone to be a guest and to give them the opportunity to go wherever they sort of wanted to go. And Seth was like, he is an advocate of Vancouver, where he was born and raised, and he was like, this is where I want to be, and let's do it. And I said, fantastic.
At one point, Seth says to you that his jam, the thing that he feels that he's best at in all the multi-hyphenate stuff he does, is writing. And it's what he spends the least amount of time doing. And you agree, and you say that for you, it's coming up with recipes, mm-hmm. playing in the kitchen, and it's also now what you spend the least amount of time doing. So with Majordomo Media starting to come online big time with the show and with what's in the pipeline, how do you feel about that?
Well, that's a heavy question. I never feel good about anything. You know this about me. Number one. So this is, it's about changing how things used to be. Like, for me to have better work-life balance, number one, I needed to step away from the restaurants. But ironically, I work still a lot on the restaurants. I'm just not doing the day-to-day. Marguerite Mariscal is the CEO, and I'm now more of a, I don't even know what my role is, but I seem to be working with
the brainstorming guy, the inspiration guy, or the beat with the stick guy.
No, not even beat. I'm more of the like counselor now, right? I'm working with the chefs, more of a, I would say, producer, trying to get the best out of them because I've been through so many of the problems and I've made every stupid mistake possible. And I'm trying to be a good parent for them and work with the team, whatever job they need me to do, that's what I'm doing. By having that different job, that separates my life in ways that I didn't anticipate. So it did carve out a lot more time to do other things. Because I have an addiction to work and...
You filled that up real fast.
Yeah, I filled it up real fast. And next thing I knew, we had more opportunities in media. And the way I looked at it was, yes, spending less time in the kitchen, but more productive in the kitchen, if that makes sense, more better use of my time, and aligning media with what restaurants could be, if that makes any sense whatsoever. I'm still figuring it out.
Well, as we all are in life. One of the most surprising episodes for me was the one in Phnom Penh with Kate McKinnon. She's a really fascinating thinker.
She's brilliant.
Cambodia was on her list. She wanted to go there.
She chose five locations. All the stands. Kurdistan, Uzbekistan. And then the last on the list was Phnom Penh and Cambodia. So we decided to go to a place both of us have never been before. And it was very hard. Number one, it was like real travel. And you plan to shoot essentially in as much as you can in one day and whatever carries over the next day. But that's it. It's like what you see is what you get. You can't really plan things out too much, even though you have an idea. But being in that country was very hard for me. And obviously very hard for, I think, Kate, too, because
the weight of the history.
It's not a place that you go in lightly at all. And I read as many things as possible because I felt the burden of trying to be a good custodian of the culture, even though I've never been there. You know, I didn't want to disrespect it at all. And what was truly remarkable, and it's something Kate and I spoke about a lot, was, oh my God, we have nothing to complain about. Because when you step off the plane in Cambodia, everyone's smiling. There's a lot of joy. They're living their life and they're doing their jobs, and expressing yourself through art or music or dance is so ingrained in the DNA of that country. And then food is obviously a part of that culture. And to see that being reclaimed and to make sure that it's not Vietnamese food. It's not Thai food. This is ours. And was very heavy for me personally, too, because I complain about everything.
So let's talk about Morocco. You go to Marrakesh with Chrissy Teigen.
That's our favorite place in the world. She goes there a lot, so she knew everything.
So I feel like a lot of the conversation with Chrissy was about parenting and fatherhood. You were impending when you shot it. You had not yet had Hugo.
Not yet. Grace was not happy that she was not able to go on this trip. It's a city she's always wanted to visit. And Chrissy has been so kind to Grace, and she is so giving. And I introduced Grace to Chrissy like maybe a year and a half ago or so. And all Chrissy has done was, you know, provide Grace with like tips about being expecting mom. And that conversation that we normally have just carried into the filming.
So you visited a Moroccan family.
Yes. He's a chef. He ran some kind of tourist cooking school. We had heard, and if you read and just talk to people, no one really eats in restaurants in Morocco, or Marrakesh, as they say. There are restaurants. There's a lot of restaurants. But to eat in someone's home, that is
That's
what you want to do. And we found someone that was willing to let us into their home, and that was an incredibly intimate experience. And to see Chrissy literally almost like shut out the cameras and just be almost like a mom was... It's like, this is amazing.
So we've talked before about issues of mental health and chefs. And I think, you know, beyond chefs, just people who are creative and work a ton of hours and trying to find some kind of balance and feel more centered. Do you feel that despite the new kind of craziness of your life, that fatherhood has given you an anchor to pull you back to center more easily?
100%. Fatherhood, you know, you hear about it so much from people that it changes their lives. And I would like to add to that course in total agreement for the best. It's humbling to realize that, you know, you're just figuring this out. And everyone in this world has gone through this process as well. So I'm trying to figure out how to get balance, number one. But in terms of the struggle of work and all of these things, weirdly, it's caused me to work more efficiently, and I have a reason to work now. It's not just about like, we got to get 3 stars here or whatever. This is, hey, like, let's build something nourishing. Let's make sure that it's balanced, right? Like, how do we create the best environment? All of these things that have been sort of percolating in this industry, for me, made a lot more sense this year. And as I become a different stage as a father, I'm sure I'll have different ideas of how that might translate back to work. But the reality is, like, all of my insecurities and all of my neuroses and mental health problems, they don't go away.
Oh, really? I mean, there's not just a magic.
Hugo, my son, doesn't just like make it magically disappear. In fact, I think it sometimes complicates matters even more. So
of course, we have to talk about LA. And that episode is with Lena Waithe. And there's so many different directions you could have gone with that episode. But the fact that you ended up in that, what is it, Hot and Juicy?
Yeah, Hot and Juicy. Yeah, it's people consider it maybe the more accessible Boiling Crab, which is great. If you haven't been to a Boiling Crab, it's a chain, but I feel like people in LA, Los Angelinos, they feel very protective about Boiling Crab. And I didn't know that Hot and Juicy was a thing in and of itself. So Lena's like, this is better. And I said, all right, let's go. And it was amazing that she would be willing on camera to eat the most sloppy, delicious food possible.
She did it very well. I really love that you took her to the South Bay, to Gardena, where there's a really strong Japanese community and food scene. But a lot of times people, Angelinos, will just drive through there because physically the way it looks, my producer Nick says, you know, sun-baked.
It's like in a Tarantino film, in his version of LA somehow. And I love it because there's, to me, that is what makes LA so great. Gardena is something that is so unassuming that you'll just drive right by it, but they're some of the most delicious things.
So the things I want to talk about are, what was the name of that mochi place?
Chikara. I'm not even sure how I found that place. I think a friend of my wife's brought me a box of these beautiful fruit-shaped mochi during the holiday season once, and I was like, where did you get these? Because these are fantastic, and I was shocked at the skill level of making these. I was like, who made these? And the next day I drove out there and I was like, this is something you would find in Japan. And the fact that it's in LA, I was like, this can only exist in LA.
And then you go to one of my favorite places that I actually haven't been to probably in 10 years, Otofuku.
So good.
And now I'm thinking about this David Chang effect where are they going to get swamped? What's going to happen? So first say what, let's talk a little bit about what Otofuku is, and then we can talk about how guilty you feel.
Yes. Otofuku has been for many years now one of my favorite restaurants. And usually it's something that I would plan to go before going back to New York on the way to LAX or something like that. It's a shop that makes comfort food, Japanese comfort food, essentially, for the large Japanese population in Gardena and Torrance. And they make all their soba from scratch. It's not like an izakaya, but it's sort of. They do a lot of great tempura. Nothing's crazy expensive. The quality is very good. Is it the best Japanese food you'll ever have? No. But it's a place where you will want to eat at least 2 times a week if you're in that neighborhood. I just love the fact that this restaurant is literally the definition of a neighborhood restaurant.
I really enjoyed the new show.
I hope everyone else does. It was a blast. And I can't believe it's airing or aired. It's pretty wild.
I've been talking with Chef David Chang about his series Breakfast, Lunch, Dinner, directed by Morgan Neville. The show's 4 episodes are streaming on Netflix now. Coming up, a closer look at food festivals. They seem to be popping up everywhere, but is what they're promising too good to be true? I'm talking with food writer Hannah Raskin when Good Food continues.